Today's edition of the Daily Caller podcast is brought to you by Life Change Tea.
Why go to getthetea.com? Because this important news could change your life. Socrates made a statement saying that all disease starts in the gut. Take care of your gut, and well, the rest speaks for itself. Life Change Tea is a wonderful way to aid in your digestion. Brew it, steep it, drink it, and feel it go to work. We at Life Change Tea have been around for years helping people just like you feel better. Lots of testimonials and lots of happy people. Log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Getthetea.com.
Alrighty, hello again everyone and welcome to it. It's the Daily Caller podcast for the 9th day of March 2020. Lousy smarch weather. Actually, it couldn't be nicer. It's supposed to be like 71 today. And I actually have a tee time for this afternoon. Shoot 9 holes with a frequent guest on this program, Brian Darling. And we can go out and embarrass ourselves while everybody else is shuddering in place because of the coronavirus. Or the Wuhan virus, which it's racist if you call it Wuhan virus. We've discovered this now. I'll explain that coming up on the show. Thanks to you for listening and tuning in, telling a friend and everything. And if you want to support the program, even if it's just a couple of bucks a month, you go to patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast and you just agree that there are different levels of things. You don't have to do any level you don't want to do. You don't have to do anything. I'm going to do the show either way. But it does take a lot of time and software upgrades are necessary because you don't need to know. Anyway, if you want to win a signed copy of Matt Walsh's book, Church of Cowards, the interview on Friday, if you haven't heard it, go listen to it. What are you waiting for? If you want to do that, you can email me, Derek@DailyCaller.com, and you let me know, preferably in the subject line, that you want to be entered to win. I'm not sure if I'm going to do the drawing this week or next week, just because I'm not sure who I'm going to have this week or next week, or if anybody, who knows? People are not traveling as much as they could and would and should. So we'll see if we even have an interview. Might have to do it via Skype. Who knows? So stay tuned, and you'll find out by Wednesday if whether the drawing's this week or next. We do have a lot on the plate this Tuesday. Tomorrow is the mini Super Tuesday, which could be the death knell for Bernie Sanders. Could be. I mean, it's a long shot, but it could be the death knell for Bernie Sanders. We'll get into that as the establishment rallies around Joe Biden. Still, Elizabeth Warren won't endorse anybody. She'll appear on Saturday Night Live, but she won't endorse anybody. Why? Because she hates them both, I think. I think that's the truth. I think she hates them both. So, and it's weird, because if Bernie were a fighter, I'd give him more of a chance. But he's not a whole hell of a lot of a fighter. Anyway, we'll get to all that and more coming up on the program. But first, let's talk about Life Change Tea from GetTheTea.com. Yes, Life Change Tea, they've been with us for a very long time. And I appreciate them, and I drink their tea. It works. If you ever feel run down, if you're by the middle of the day and you're like, what's going on? I'm eating right. I'm eating healthy. What's the problem? Why am I running out of energy? Well, a big part of that could be sitting inside the walls of your digestive tract, the end bits. Now, you can go out there and clean it out the other way, the old-fashioned way, I suppose, but that's a little unpleasant. Some might say a pain in the ass, whereas GetTheTea.com, Life Change Tea, cleans you out the natural way. It allows you, keeps you regular, and it allows you, once it's done its job, to absorb more of the nutrition from the food that you consume. See, the food that we consume is heavily processed. It's largely garbage. A lot of the nutrition's been sort of processed out of it. That's where Life Change Tea comes in. It lets you get the most of everything you consume. And it tastes good. Just drink a cup a day. Don't overdrink it. You will regret it. It works. And in large quantities, it works really well. So follow the instructions. And at checkout, enter promo code Derek. Click the apply button for special discounts just for listeners to this podcast. No other podcast. Other people out there named Derek can take credit for it. But it's not the case. It's for just you. listening to this podcast. You support this show by supporting our sponsors, and we appreciate the heck out of it. Okay, let's get down to the nitty-gritty dirt band. I don't know why I thought of that. If you offered me $1 million, I don't think I could name a single song by them. But the name is catchy. Okay, the coronavirus, that's where we'll start. It is spreading as we knew it would. It's still flu season, so it remains to be seen whether or not this will be like the flu and sort of dissipate, sort of go away, not completely, but go away once we get past flu season. See, at flu season, people spend a lot of time inside. People are touching things a lot more frequently because you're inside. There are close interactions with people. That's why the flu spreads so easily in the winter, but in the summer months goes away because we're outside. We are getting fresh air. We're not, you know, hugging each other all the time. Things like, they're not in close quarters with, I suppose we probably, if you're a hugger, I'm not a hugger, but if you're a hugger, you hug as much as you do, but you're not in such close quarters with people. And while people are sitting around wondering whether or not they got the coronavirus or whether or not they just have the flu or whether or not they just have an outbreak of hypochondria, the left is focusing on what is, of course, most important in life. A guy named David Gura. He is, he's been a long time sort of left-wing writer. He's written for Bloomberg TV and NPR. He's now a contributor or whatever reporter at MSNBC and NBC News. He tweeted out yesterday evening as a member of Congress. Well, I'll get to that in a second. He says that, FYI, calling COVID-19, which is the way people who are dumb like to make themselves feel smart by calling it COVID-19 instead of coronavirus, calling it the Wuhan virus is racist. Calling it the Wuhan virus is racist. Now, that's where it started. It should, by all rights and rationales, it should be called the Wuhan virus. It started in Wuhan province, China. So why wouldn't you call it the Wuhan virus? But, well, because the wrong people called it Wuhan virus, that is why, that is the problem. Congressman Paul Gosar tweeted out, quote, "I am announcing that I, along with three of my senior staff, are officially under self-quarantine after sustained contact at CPAC with a person who has since been hospitalized with the Wuhan virus. My office will be closed for the week." Now, we're already a week out past CPAC, so, you know, the 7 days of the horse having left the barn. But yes, it was announced that an attendee at CPAC, apparently a VIP attendee at CPAC, came down with, was diagnosed with the Wuhan virus, the coronavirus. And now people are scrambling. Of course, the organizers of CPAC are doing what everybody in that situation does in the world of politics. They're scrambling to cover their ass. The head of the American Conservative Union, which puts on the CPAC conference every year, has announced through an email to all attendees or anybody who even registered that somebody attended the conference has now been diagnosed and hospitalized with the coronavirus. Who, you might ask? Because that would be a good question that you'd want to ask, especially if you were there, because you want to know whether or not you interacted with this person or, you know, be able to connect the chain, so whether or not you should be concerned. But they aren't telling anybody. That is why it's a problem. This is why I have a problem with it. The Schlapps are nice people, but they're handling this wrong. See, not just because they aren't telling everybody, they're telling some people. They are telling some people. They told the congressman. They told Ted Cruz. They told Congressman Paul Gosar. They told Ted Cruz, who has also quarantined himself for the next 7 days, hoping that nothing happened, nothing transferred. This, to me, means a couple of things. This is a big VIP to be able to rub shoulders with these people. If you go to CPAC, you don't generally see Ted Cruz kind of milling about, wandering around the hallways. That's not how he works. He goes in the back way, because otherwise he would be late everywhere. You know, you watch somebody sort of political famous, which is pathetic phrase that exists, but sort of political famous that walks through there and everybody stops them. Oh, can I get a picture with you? Oh, can I get a picture with you? And you can't get anywhere. So the VIPs who have speaking slots go in another entrance. The other entrances put you in the backstage area. The backstage area is only accessible to people who are working on CPAC for the ACU, or people who pony up big money to be a VIP, or pony up bigger money to the ACU. Actually, I don't even think you can buy a VIP pass, because they're like a few hundred bucks, maybe $1,000. That's not enough to get into the holding area, like where the president, vice president, cabinet secretaries, senators, where they're guaranteed to show up. They might show up on Radio Row. They might show up elsewhere briefly. But in general, they come in and they come out through a secret entrance so they can get in and out without having to be stuck there for hours on end, because they don't want to be a dick and say, I can't talk to anybody. So if this person is interacting with members of Congress, and Matt Schlapp made a point of saying that this person did not attend on Saturday, so as to alleviate any concerns about the president, because the president spoke on Saturday, that means to me that they are some big muckety-muck who added a couple of zeros to any of the, probably the biggest check you'd ever written to the ACU. You buy access that way at conferences like this. You become a donor to the organization putting it on. You don't become a sponsor per se, although maybe you run a company that is a sponsor. We don't know. But if this person, as we're being told, was not milling about with the common folk, but was and has caused at least two members of Congress at this moment to self-quarantine, that means that this is a muckety-muck. They bought influence. That buying of influence, that check must have been pretty big, because the organizers of CPAC are not announcing the person's name so that anybody else, all the riffraff at CPAC, could know whether or not they were interacting with this person. I went to CPAC one day for about 3 hours. I didn't shake anybody's hand. I made a point of it. I did the fist bump and the elbow, so I'm not worried about it. But I did see Matt Schlapp. He patted me on the shoulder. Should I be concerned? I'm not. But this is a load of garbage. If you know who it was, and if some people are worth being told, what are you saying about the other people who aren't being told? If that person never left the VIP room, see, this is the thing about CPAC. If you've never been to the Gaylord Conference Center at National Harbor, the place is friggin' huge. You had CPAC there with 10,000 attendees plus media and all that. Then you had at least three other conferences going on there, and there was plenty of room. The place is literally gigantic. So if you have all those people and all that it's not even really cramped space, but all those people, there are restaurants there, there are bars there, there are tons of restaurants and bars in the area, plus this person theoretically would have stayed somewhere, there is a high probability, even if this person, as they say, never attended a general session, which means the gigantic room full of people, there is a high probability that this person was wandering through the Gaylord unbeknownst to anybody. Probably somebody you never heard of, just somebody who's rich and warrants special protection from these people. Again, if you sign a big enough check on the front of it, people will take care of you. But it really is screwing over a lot of attendees unnecessarily. They likely did not interact with this person. They likely did not see this person. One person at a 20,000 people in an entire conference center and hotel and gigantic area, the odds are really against it. Why not name the person? Why? Because here's the thing. If Ted Cruz is feeling the need, because they had prolonged exposure to this person. And Congressman Paul Gosar is self-imposing a quarantine because they had so much exposure to this person. How much exposure did people have to Ted Cruz after that? See, this is the thing about it. It's not like you can't transmit it because you aren't sick. It is just like the flu. If somebody who has the flu coughs on their hand, there's likely the flu virus on there. You shake somebody's hand, then they've got the flu virus on their hand. Then that person picks at their teeth or rubs their eye or picks their nose or whatever, and that virus then gets into them. There's more than one virus. So while you could have shaken somebody's hand and gotten the flu virus on your hand and then decided to dig for gold in your nasal passages and give yourself the flu, you will still have it on your hands as well. Then you go, unpleasant as that is, if somebody's shaking their hands and picking their nose and then shaking more hands. So as they did meet and greet other people, that was there was could have been surface contact, because these people shake hands all the time. There could be surface transmission, whether or not that person then rubs their eye or whatever, or transmits it to someone else. Who knows? Well, you cannot know if you had any contact with the person or if you had contact with people who had contact with the person unless you know who the person is. I understand there are HIPAA laws and privacy issues going on here that people, that governments have to respect. But this is not government. They are obviously telling some people. Why not others? This makes the Schlapps look really, really bad. They've made other mistakes that have made them look really, really bad. They invited Milo Yiannopoulos and then uninvited Milo Yiannopoulos to speak 1 year within a week of each other. I mean, it was just, there's a lot of bungling and fumbling that goes on. And I realize this will probably get me not invited to the Schlapps' next Christmas party next year. But so be it. It has to be said. It's time for them to move on. I realize they've made a fortune off of their association with the ACU, and good for them. But it's time to move on. It's time, actually, I think CPAC should get back more towards what it was before. Instead of having essentially Fox News up on the stage all day, every day, and speeches, just, it used to also be about elevating people, younger people, showing what they're doing, inspirational stories, trying to inspire the crowd to maybe go back home and do things to advance the conservative movement on their own. Now it all seems to be about who cuts the biggest check and who is who's on TV the most. It really is, it's not worth going to, and it hasn't been worth going to for a long time unless you really just need to get your picture taken with somebody who's on TV all the time. Because I haven't really gone in any real sense, except for work-related things, probably in 10 years, just because the novelty has worn off. The utility of it was worn out, and it became a showcase for people to peacock around and help advance their own brands. It's a whole bunch of speakers trying to advance or reinforce their own brands. There's very little attempt to advance the cause of conservatism anymore. The breakout sessions are still good. The smaller rooms where they talk about issues, yes, very important. They actually bring experts in for those things. The experts don't make their way to the stage. The show ponies that you wouldn't want to ride, but everybody knows they get up on the main stage. There are no serious panel discussions anymore on the main stage with policy experts. It's all, you know, you might as well watch Fox and you'll get the same thing. So yes, coronavirus came to CPAC and is now causing problems there. Hopefully those problems can be resolved. But again, along the calling it Wuhan virus, as I said, that guy from MSNBC, another guy from MSNBC, Chris Hayes, a congressman announces that he and three staffers are self-quarantining because they've been exposed to the Wuhan virus. What does Chris Hayes do? Rachel Maddow with a penis says, quote, just astoundingly gross to call it the Wuhan virus. See, because life is about priorities, and the left's priorities are always, always politics. First and foremost, they don't give a damn about individuals. They don't give a damn about people or their families or concern. If they can score political points off of it, they will dance a jig on your grave as your coffin is being lowered into the ground. This is how gross they are. What's funny about Chris Hayes is just 2 weeks earlier, on February 27th, Chris Hayes tweeted this, quote, okay, so what's the best book on the Spanish flu pandemic? Why is it okay to refer to the Spanish flu as the Spanish flu when it's not okay to refer to the Wuhan virus as the Wuhan virus? Yes, Wuhan is also known as Corona, but the Spanish flu is also known as the 1918 pandemic. You could easily call it that, yet Chris Hayes and his bowl cut decide that he has to go another route. He has to go with the common parlance. Now, I don't care what anybody calls anything. I'm not looking to be offended all the time. But the left is, and that they would try to score political points at moments like this tells you a lot about these people. It really does. In other news, by the way, if you own airline stock, good luck to you. The airlines, if you want to travel, you can travel pretty cheaply right now. So you've got that going for you. But there are all sorts of travel problems. And if you booked a cruise, I'm sorry about that. That's just not going to work out for you. I always thought those things were just floating bales of food poisoning. But now they are floating quarantine ships. It's just a mess. The whole thing is a mess. And I think it's largely due to the fact that we are not being told the truth by the people whose job it is to tell us the truth. The media is trying to cause a panic because it hurts Donald Trump, or they think it hurts Donald Trump. It's pathetic, really. There's a guy by the name of Yossi. I'm going to butcher his last name. Yossi Gestener. Gestener, I don't know. He is a commentary writer, and he went on a Twitter thread yesterday that actually points out a lot of the hypocrisy on this. I want to read it because I think it's important to note how the goalposts are being moved on this thing as if there is or was some sort of magic wand that could have been waved and something that could have been done to stop the spread of this thing in the world that we live in right now, where you can be on the other side of the planet in 12 hours. He tweets that Friday, January 31st, 2020, a few weeks before coronavirus had officially spread to other countries, which led to the bad stock market week, the Trump administration announced travel restrictions on China. Here are some of the reporting it generated. This is from Politico on February 4th. Quote, the Trump administration's quarantine and travel ban in response to the Wuhan coronavirus could undercut international efforts to fight the outbreak by antagonizing Chinese leaders as well as stigmatizing people of Asian descent, according to public health experts and lawmakers. Well, what do you know? Liberal experts and liberal politicians condemned the president and his actions, his early actions, as possibly making things worse. The head of the World Health Organization, whose name is wildly unpronounceable, and I'm not even going to try it, said Tuesday on February 4th that widespread travel bans and restrictions aren't needed to stop the outbreak and could have, quote, the effect of increasing fear and stigma with little public health benefit. Isn't that nice? The World Health Organization, of course, is another worthless organization. Again, February 2nd, 2020, the Trump administration ordered U.S. travelers to China's Hubei province to be held in mandatory quarantine for 2 weeks, and the anti-Trump article by Alice Alistein at Politico quoted, again, those anonymous health experts, who said that would make it worse because people would hide their symptoms. Quote, voluntary measures in education usually work better than edicts that may lead people to lie about their symptoms and travel history and encourage countries to conceal outbreaks, public health experts say. Always these anonymous public health experts. They're all liberals. In addition, travel restrictions hurt economies and divert public health resources into enforcing a ban that may not be useful at preventing spread of infection, according to Saad Omer, director of the Yale Institute of Global Health. Again, on the 2nd of January, the same article by Politico quotes Congressman Ami Bera, who is also a doctor out of California, Democrat. He's fully opposing the late January, early February steps by the Trump administration. Paragraphs 13, 14. Read this. Bera, who is chair of a foreign affairs subcommittee hearing on the epidemic on Wednesday, says he's concerned the Trump administration's cautionary measures may be backfiring. Quote, we shouldn't have an antagonistic relationship with the Chinese. We should be working hand in hand, he said. Besides the diplomatic blowback, he said the travel ban, quote, probably doesn't make sense since the outbreak has already spread to several other countries. Again, these are the people who were whining and complaining, saying that the president did not act quickly enough. Here they are condemning his early actions. They weren't suggesting early actions. They waited until it was already too late, really, to say that the president didn't do enough. At the end of the article, paragraph 20 onward, Politico finally gave a few quotes to the Trump administration's early public efforts on corona, which again is almost 3 weeks before it was reported to have reached Italy, South Korea, and so on. So why is this relevant? Because the lead item now, yesterday on Politico, is an article by a reporter named Dan Diamond, headlined, quote, Trump's mismanagement helped fuel coronavirus crisis. The subheadline, quote, current and former administration officials blame the president for creating a no bad news atmosphere that sifted attempts to combat the outbreak. Now, isn't that neat and interesting? This is when the administration announced measures 5+ weeks ago, which was weeks before the numbers came from Italy, etc., that Dan Diamond himself wrote an article which showed that many arms of the U.S. government were fully involved, from the CDC to the State Department to the Department of Homeland Security. Isn't that interesting? The exact same reporter who's declaring that the Trump administration fumbled this thing a month ago wrote a story headline, quote, White House dramatically scales up U.S. response to unprecedented coronavirus. Now, how are they fumbling? Well, it doesn't matter. Dan Diamond tweeted now that Trump's, quote, initial coronavirus moves in late January were widely hailed as strong and an appropriate response. No, they weren't. They were not. In fact, that article on the 31st of January said that it was naivete on behalf of the president and that he was overreacting. Again, the headline from February 4th in Politico as well. Coronavirus quarantine travel could backfire, experts fear. Do the people who work at Politico not read Politico? That's entirely possible. Politico's narrative in early February didn't just attack the Trump administration's steps on corona as being too much. The article kept blaming the moves on harming efforts to control the virus. This is a claim by Representative Ami Bera. Again, Ami Bera. Well, these are some of the stories here that he was attacking the president of the United States, saying that cautionary measures may be backed. Bera, who is chair of the House Foreign Affairs Subcommittee hearing on epidemic, said he's concerned that the Trump administration's cautionary measures may be backfiring. Policies could already be complicating the international response. The World Health Organization's top official Tuesday repeated concerns that moves to interfere with transportation and trade could harm efforts to address the crisis. The Trump administration's quarantine and travel ban in response to the Wuhan coronavirus could undercut international efforts to fight the outbreak by antagonizing Chinese leaders. These people can't make up their mind. They're willing to make whatever argument they need to make at any time they're needing to make it in order to score themselves political points. This is sick. This is opportunism. If you have somebody elderly with respiratory problems in your or respiratory problems in your family, or especially both, you have to be a little bit concerned right now. And you're getting mixed information. You're being told that what the Trump administration is doing is ridiculous and an overreaction and going to make things worse. And then you're being told they didn't act fast enough. They didn't do enough. What are they do anything? These are by the same people, both Democrats, in and out of the media. They need to make up their minds on what the truth is, because both of these versions cannot be the truth. Can they? They acted too quickly. They acted too slowly. Which is it? They don't have an answer. They don't need an answer, because they are the ones who would demand the answers. Who's going to demand an answer from the people whose jobs it is to get answers from people? Who's going to demand the truth from people whose jobs it is to tell the truth and determine what is the truth? This is why journalism has to die. Hopefully, journalism will catch coronavirus. And hopefully, journalism is a three-pack-a-day smoker for a very long time and about 94 years old. Because it's time for journalism to die. If they're not willing to practice it anymore, it's time to put it out of our misery, to be perfectly honest. By the way, I just saw this. Ebola was named for a river in the Congo, Zika for a forest in Uganda, and Lyme disease was named for Lyme, Connecticut. So calling diseases by where they first showed up is not all that uncommon, nor is it particularly racist, which is probably why Politico had been doing it this whole time. But hey, what are you going to do? That's the modern left. They saw an opportunity. A Republican called it the Wuhan virus. So that's racist. And that's just how it works. Okay, there is other news out there. I want to get to some of the liberal hypocrisy. I love calling out hypocrisy. I absolutely love calling out hypocrisy. There's a guy by the name of Carlos Maza. You probably never heard of him unless you spend far too much time online and worrying about left-wing trolls have to say and communist agitators. But you might remember his name because he went after Steven Crowder, trying to get him, I don't know what he was trying to get him to lose money, because Steven Crowder made fun of Carlos Maza because Carlos Maza is gay. But Carlos Maza calls himself the gay wonk, which I assume it's not because he digs chicks, because it's definitely not because he's a wonk, because he has no policy background. His resume is Media Matters for America, where you're a senior fellow and watching TV you hate, bitching about it on TV and Twitter, or bitching about it online. That's all they do. That's all they do is watch Fox News and bitch about it. I don't know how you can look at yourself if you have that job. And then he went to work for Vox Media, where he did a video series called Strike Through that somehow was canceled. It's just him bitching. Oh my God, I don't like this one. I don't like that thing. I don't like the other thing. And they need to be canceled. And he eventually that got canceled, according to the New York Post. I don't know how you cancel an online series. You just decide nobody's watching it, or it's an embarrassment and you stop funding it. But he was canceled. Well, he's a communist. He bitches nonstop about people with money. And it turns out he comes from a lot of money, like so many of our little friends on the left. The New York Post reports Carlos Maza doesn't like rich people. The social media socialist, with more than 150,000 followers on Twitter and YouTube combined, regularly uses his platform to rail against the wealthy and powerful and urges fans to be skeptical of their opinions. Quote, just found out James Carville, I guess I should do the way that they like being mocked. Just found out that James Carville, who spends his time lecturing Democrats for being too far left, lives in an absolutely obscene four-story mansion, Maza said in one such example from February, blasting the longtime Democratic strategist and posting a photo of Carville's old home to his Twitter account. Dear God, can we stop taking political advice from the ultra wealthy? He bemoaned. You really have to respect this guy's grift. Constantly dressing in normal clothes on TV to feign relatability while living like a masterful con artist. Now, what are there, like, rich guy clothes? Is it just covered in money? Is it like American Express cards, black American Express cards shaped into a jacket? I don't know. I feel like I missed a memo. Like any good online socialist, Maza raises money for his internet presence through a Patreon account. Hey, see, so you support me through Patreon. At least you don't have to lose a piece of your soul. Where comrades, a word Carlos uses to describe his supporters, can fund him in increments of $2, $5, or $10 a month. But Maza wants to start eating the rich. But if Maza wants to start meeting the rich, he may have to begin with his own family. Through his clan, the Millennial Firebrand is connected to multiple Florida mega mansions, a $7.1 million pad on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, purchased under an LLC, and a yacht by luxury boatmaker Donzi. I never even heard of Donzi. Seems like a misspelling of Fonzie to me, but I bet it's cool. Maza's mother, Vivian Maza, was one of the first employees at Ultimate Software, a Florida-based behemoth which now employs more than 5,000 people. Starting in 1990 as an office manager, she ultimately rose to become the group's chief people officer in 2004. In addition to her day job, Vivian Maza also developed a very close personal relationship with company founder Scott Shurer, so close that an independent assessment of the company in 2016 cited the relationship as a corporate governance concern. Ooh, they're all rebels, those Mazas. The report said the pair is believed to be more than just co-workers and have a familiar relationship. The two later became engaged, and the people lived, and they lived together for 4 years, with Cher being the de facto stepfather to Carlos. See, there's lots of daddy issues. There's lots of daddy issues with all these people from the left. Public records show Vivian, Scott, Carlos, and his brother Isabel all registered to vote in a 5-bedroom, 8-bathroom waterfront palace in Boca Raton, Florida. The property sold in 2018 for $10.8 million, according to Zillow. Cher also unloaded a 4-bed, 4-bath home in 2015 mansion in West Florida for $1.85 million. Vivian currently resides full-time at a $4.4 million 2-bed, 3-bath luxury condo in Fort Lauderdale, which she lists as her primary residence, according to a 2020 report filed by which for the LLC that she concerns. That same company purchased a $7.1 million condo in the Upper West Side of Manhattan in November 2017. Now they go on to list even more assets, including the fact that the stepfather salary in 2015 of $38.3 million and more real estate valued at tens of millions of dollars. Now, isn't that nice to grow up in that and then you end up hating money? Of course, it's really easy to hate money when you don't need money, when you've always had money. Whenever I hear of people like this, I'm reminded of this scene, this quick snippet from the movie The Aviator. It's by Martin Scorsese, and it's a Leonardo DiCaprio movie about the life of Howard Hughes.
Then how'd you make all that money?
We don't care about money here, Mr. Hughes.
Well, that's because you have it.
Would you repeat that?
You don't care about money because you've always had it.
Well, then how did you make all
that? Excuse me, I'm speaking.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
Some of us choose to work for a living.
That's how it is most of the time. The people who earn the money appreciate the money because they put the work in for it. The people who inherit the money depend or benefit from the money without having to break a sweat to earn a dime of it, never really have to worry about making a bill, figuring out I can pay this much on this one this month and this much on this one that month. Hopefully that'll keep everybody happy. Those people are the ones who don't appreciate it. Those are the ones who actually resent it. But one thing, the people who resent it, they're usually the second or third generation, one of the things that people who resent it don't do is give it away, is walk away from it, is want nothing to do with it. Isn't that so weird? They're willing. They love it. They'll travel the country, these little trust fund protester woke crowd. You ever wonder, how is it that these people can afford to be out blocking the freeways while everybody else is trying to get to work or home from work? It's because they come from money. It's that simple. They love embracing the liberty that comes with money, but they hate money itself, mostly because their parents probably didn't love them enough in their minds. They have a sense of entitlement. They were spoiled little brats growing up, and they don't understand why the world doesn't bow to their whims now that they're adults. They think that they're smart. It's not just Carlos Maza that is this sort of hypocrite. And by the way, he begrudgingly admitted that, oh, yes, he comes from money. But he only did it after the New York Post story was, before the New York Post reached out to him for comment on this. Well, the Post is coming out with a story, so I figured I'd tell you about this. He said, amongst other things, quote, "My mom and her fiance are very wealthy thanks to a software company they started together when I was a kid. As a result, I've gotten to live a life of tremendous privilege." Well, if you've never had to worry about where your next meal's coming from, whether or not you're going to be able to make rent or keep the lights on, what gives you any authority or expertise on the poor? Well, of course, he just appointed himself a wonk. He's gay wonk. And of course, wonk is generally reserved for somebody who has expertise in a particular field. There is no evidence whatsoever that Carlos has expertise in any particular field except in watching Fox and whining about it on social media, since that's what he did for years at Media Matters. Of course, Media Matters pays people low wages. Coming from a wealthy family, with Washington, D.C. being one of the most expensive places to live in the country, that frees him up to do that. So, of course, these leftists are raging hypocrites. It's not just him. Many other people on the left who champion the poor, who advocate for redistribution of wealth, are also children of privilege. Ezra Klein's father was a mathematician, a math professor out in the University of California system. You think you're going to miss many bills in that? Matt Iglesias, who is really just one of the densest people on the planet, is a editor over at Vox News. He's written several books that have not sold combined as much as mine did, but his parents and his grandparents were all authors, writers, or artists. So he's trying to follow in their footsteps. He just doesn't want to accept the fact that talent skipped a generation, as did intelligence. And then there's Emily Tisch Sussman. Emily Tisch Sussman is an advocate. She was the one who said that not voting, if you vote for Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders over Elizabeth Warren, you're probably a sexist. That's evidence of your sexism. She comes from, well, the Tisch family is wildly wealthy, and her husband Sussman's family is also wildly wealthy. Like billions of dollars wealthy, these families, hedge funds in Greenwich, places like things like that. These are the people who advocate for redistribution of your income, not their income. They take jobs that don't necessarily pay a fortune. Why? Because they can afford to. They don't have to make money. They work to pass the time. They don't work to make ends meet. So many of the people who advocate on behalf of the poor have never experienced the poor, experienced poverty, let alone really experienced life where the poor live. Oh, they've read Angela's Ashes, or probably more likely watched the movie, and felt really bad about it and thought that somebody needed to do something about this. But this is the mindset of the left. Somebody needs to do something about that. The only way to get out of poverty is for you to do something about yourself. That's what's always left out of these leftist experiences. Why? Because they never had to. They don't understand that because they never had to. They think that there is a magic policy or a magic wand, or they could tax somebody else and make another person rich. It doesn't work that way. There isn't enough money in the United States of America to give everybody enough money to lift them out of poverty. You're going to have to lift yourself out of poverty. If you start a business, we'll just use Facebook. I use this example all the time, but it's appropriate. It can be widgets, it can be chocolate, it can be cookies, it can be anything. You start a business. And you start a business, suddenly that business is worth a fortune, okay? Not suddenly, but it takes a lot of hard work. That business is now worth $10 billion. That $10 billion that your business is worth, that you started, that you toiled over, did not come into being. That $10 billion did not come from someplace else. It did not suck $10 billion worth of net worth out of other companies. That company created that $10 billion, thereby the person who created that company created that $10 billion worth of wealth. Whatever the hell Facebook is worth, hundreds of billions of dollars, it was created wealth that came from nowhere, came from nothing. We're dealing with wealth here. We're not dealing with piles of money. They lifted themselves out of poverty. That's how you have to do it. That's the only way to do it. They also don't want to accept the fact that most people are content with whatever it is they have, as long as they're willing to make their ends meet and have some fun in their lives, spend time with their friends and family. That's more than enough of them. Not everybody wants to be a millionaire or a billionaire. Some people are quite content to live a middle class or lower lifestyle, depending on who you are and how you live. That's your choice. They don't want to accept that on the left. They believe that everybody is jealous of everybody else who has more than them, and it's unfair that somebody has more than them, and the government needs to come in and make it fair by taking from the people who earned it and giving it to the people who have not. There's one thing I've learned in my life of being incredibly poor and then doing okay. It's that you don't appreciate what is given to you or what you really assign no value to. I'll use my own self as an example. I've had, I don't know how many cars, 4 or 5 cars before I moved out here while in high school and in college and while dicking around in my 20s. And they were all junkers. They were priced, one I bought for $250, 3 I bought for $400, and then finally the last one I paid $1,500 for, which was a huge expense to me, and actually the only one that I was able to sell. The rest ended up in a junkyard, and the one that was $1,500, I got $400 for, and it was pretty much died. The people across the street from my sister bought it, and they rode it into the ground because they didn't appreciate it either. All of those cars were beaten up, abused, filled with garbage. That might have been 4 cars for $400. Beaten up, abused, filled with garbage, rusted out. Things went unrepaired. I just kind of let it go to hell. I didn't have any pride of ownership. I had necessity of ownership. So what did I care if the doorknob broke? Or the locking mechanism fell out of the driver's door. It didn't fall completely out. It was just dangling out. And you could just twist the whole thing. If you just pushed it in there, it would sit there. But you grab it and pull it out, and you twist the whole mechanism. It unlocked the door. It was convenient because I left the key in the fuse box, so that I didn't have to carry keys. Nobody's going to steal this car. It was a 1982 Pontiac J2000 with like 180,000 miles on it. Nobody's going to steal this car. And if they did, I wasn't going to get it. I didn't have insurance. I had no fault insurance, which the maximum I'd ever see out of anything, if somebody rolled over it in a cement truck followed by a tank, would be $400, which is what I paid for it. The thing was a piece of junk. There was a 2x4 holding up the driver's side seat, actually, because the driver's side seat broke. That's the kind of car it was. The back seat, you couldn't see the floor because it was filled with garbage, pop bottles, water bottles, fast food. I just threw it in the back. Like once a year, I'd clean it out. I didn't really appreciate that car because I was young and stupid and it didn't cost very much. When I moved out to Washington, or to Baltimore, working in Washington, it took she's 12 years. I think it was 12 years. I didn't need a car in Baltimore, and I'd take the train to Washington, so I didn't really need a car. But eventually, I got a car. I bought my first and only, to this point, brand new car, a Mini, in 2013. That car I washed every Saturday. Every single Saturday, I would take it to the car wash, spray it down, scrub it down, dry it off, vacuum it out. That was my baby. I bought that thing. I earned that thing. I had pride of ownership. I just recently traded it in, and it felt kind of weird. I felt kind of dirty trading it in. I was like, this sucks. I wish I could keep this car, but I need the money that they're giving me for it off the new car, because you can't fit a family in a Mini Cooper. So, yeah, that's the difference between pride of ownership and having no pride of ownership. If you go to any public housing, when I was roofing, we did a lot of public housing in Detroit. Those places were messes. The individual apartments were messes. The hallways were messes. The stairwells were messes. Lights were burned out and broken. Holes were in the wall. Carpet was ripped up. You don't see that in condo buildings. Why? Because one had it given to them, and the other one is something somebody bought. Somebody has an investment in. They have pride of ownership. The rich kids who never had to work a day in their life, while they're not likely to defecate in a stairwell of an apartment building or a public housing unit, they have that same mentality. They'll never understand it. They'll never appreciate what they have. If they want to give away their money, that's perfectly fine. And I encourage them to do it, and they can email me, and we can exchange. They can send me a check, or we can do a drop-off, or whatever. But they think that poverty and giving people things is a way to improve people's lives, when in reality, giving people things damages them. They'll never appreciate it. Never. You need to spend some time around poor people, and not just around people who theorize about what it's like to be poor, to really understand the mentality of poor people. First of all, they're not all miserable. Secondly, if you give them something, they're not going to appreciate it. And if you give them too much, they may not be able to handle it. Look at all the lottery winners who've gone broke, or worse, had their lives completely fall apart. Earning is always the better way. It's not to say you can't give somebody a handout or a leg up or a helping hand or whatever. In fact, if people are working their asses off, that's very much appreciated, and you can help people along their way. But just randomly giving things to people, you think they deserve it because they exist, they will treat it as though they deserve it. And if you destroy it or whatever, you waste it, well, just give me another one. I deserve that as much as the last one. I care not for it at all. Huge, huge difference that these children with silver spoons born up their ass will never understand, ever, under any circumstances. I didn't mean to spend this much time on this, but it's one of the things that drives me nuts, is these rich assholes telling everybody how they should live, how they should live their lives. You've never really had to worry about paying your bills or going, oh crap, is my cable going to be cut off today? I guess I got to give them, how much do I have to give them to make sure it's not shut off? How much do I have to give them to make sure the heat doesn't go off until the end of the month where I can afford to pay it, where whatever. Get on a payment plan. They've never been on a payment plan or in credit counseling. Right after college, I was in credit counseling. I had to go, it was called AmeriDebt at the time, and I had to cut my credit cards, and I'd racked up, I don't know, it was like $10,000 worth of debt. Maybe it was less than that. But it seemed like an insurmountable amount of money to me at the time. And I asked somebody if I should declare bankruptcy, and they said, no, you shouldn't do that. That'll look worse on you much longer than that. Just work on it and talk to somebody. So I got to that, and I paid it off. I paid it all off, every penny of it. Cut them all up, burned them, whatever. They're gone, and I took care of it. It was character building, and it was wildly satisfying to write that last $311 check. That's what it, I don't know why I remember that. My payment was $311 every month. And when I paid off that last one, I was like, oh my God, I don't have any credit card debt. what the hell am I going to do with myself? How does this happen? See, I couldn't fathom that. There was a sense of accomplishment. Of course, my income had gone up, and I was able to take care of it and maintain myself without doing that to myself again. And I recommend you live that way, but you don't live that way from the start. You kind of have to learn it, and you have to earn it. I earned it. Oh, baby, I earned it. So to watch these pricks who had the whole world handed to them do nothing but bitch about other people about whom they know nothing and tell them how they need to live? No. No. Anyway, I'll get off that high horse for now. In other news, Hillary Clinton's documentary premiered on Hulu. I don't have Hulu. I don't understand the appeal of Hulu. There really isn't anything on regular TV that I watch. I watch like HBO and History Channel and Bravo and yeah, I watch the cheesy. God, you know how sad my life is? I have a show, I think, every night of the week except Friday, DVR'd on Bravo. You want to make fun of me? Here you go. Monday night, it is whatever version of Below Deck is on. Right now, it's Sailing Ships. Love them all. Then on Tuesday, it's Vanderpump Rules. One of you guys, when I asked for trashy TV shows, recommended Vanderpump Rules, and that's the one that stuck. On Wednesday, it is Summer House, which I think somebody else also recommended, which is trashy. Just, I can't get enough of it. And then, this is going to cause me grief. I can hear the emails already. On Thursday, it's Project Runway. Yeah, I dated a girl who was obsessed with fashion. Didn't last very long. It lasted longer than it should have, though. She was obsessed with fashion. She spent herself nearly broke on fashion. But she turned me on to Project Runway. Plus, Karlie Kloss is pretty good looking. And then on Friday, it's Love After Lockup. I told you, I can't watch cable news anymore. I feel like I'm actually learning more about the human condition by watching these garbage reality shows than I do watching cable news, because cable news doesn't do news anymore. But, so I don't need Hulu. I got enough going on. Anyway, the documentary came out and we've got audio of Hillary Clinton talking about Bernie Sanders. Now, we had this quote before. We didn't have the audio of it before. With Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden really being the only people left in the race, Tulsi Gabbard gets no respect. It's kind of funny, all the whining by the left. Elizabeth Warren was only defeated, only didn't win because of sexism. Horrible, horrible sexism. Horrible sex. Tulsi Gabbard's still out there. Are you ladies all going to go and run and vote for Tulsi Gabbard? No? That's weird. The DNC changed the rules of the last two debates to allow Michael Bloomberg in. You used to have to not only be polling at a certain point, but you had to have a certain number of donors to qualify for the debate. Michael Bloomberg didn't take any donors, so technically he didn't qualify. The DNC waived that so Michael Bloomberg could be on the stage, so, you know, Elizabeth Warren could scalp him, but they got him up on stage. Now they've changed the rules again. It was supposed to be that by this point, if you didn't have any delegates, you were not going to be on the debate stage. Well, Tulsi Gabbard has won some delegates. They changed it again, and now Tulsi Gabbard is out. Where is the whining and the pissing and the moaning about how unfair and misogynistic the DNC is and the Democrats are in general about Tulsi Gabbard being excluded from the debates? There's none, because Tulsi Gabbard doesn't count. All women are not equal in the eyes of the left, and all women on the left are not equal in the eyes of the left. Just an interesting aside. Well, Hillary talking about one of the two candidates left, talking about Bernie Sanders, how he's accomplished nothing and how he has no friends. And actually, both are true.
He was in Congress for years, years. He had one senator support him. Nobody likes him. Nobody wants to work with him. He got nothing done. He was a career politician. He did not work till he was like 41, and then he got elected to something. It was all just baloney, and I feel so bad that, you know, people got sucked into it.
And she knows people getting sucked into things. But what she's saying there about Bernie Sanders is absolutely true. The guy had been a complete failure at life until he finally got elected mayor of Burlington, Vermont, because I assume everybody got drunk on election day one time or lost a bet or something. But it's true about Bernie Sanders. He has no legislative accomplishments. He doesn't build any coalitions. The things that he says that he was involved with passing are things that would have passed otherwise, and he voted for, he glommed onto. He was kicked out of a commune for not pulling his own weight, for God's sakes. You would think that would be his utopia, but he couldn't carry his own freaking weight. And he got asked to leave a freaking commune. He has been a failure at everything except being a communist con man. And thanks to the education system and the deterioration of it and the liberal media. See, Bernie Sanders isn't as far left as the media wants this country to be just yet. They recognize that it's going to have to get there in increments. But they've done such a good job of bastardizing the education system that there are enough people out there on the left who say, let's go full bore. This is what we need. We need communism. And so he's a viable candidate. He gave Hillary a run for her money. She should have said something like this the last time. It would have helped her, I think, in the Democratic primary. I think more people, I think a lot of Democrats who didn't bother to go vote would hear this and go, you know what? She's right. She's right. I'm going to go and vote for her because I don't want him. He didn't win, but he could have been finished off a lot sooner. Joe Biden, same thing. But Joe Biden isn't going to do that because they all want to try to appeal to these lunatics who think that Bernie Sanders has the answer, that Bernie Sanders and AOC and people like that care about them. They fall into that category of not having a damn clue what they're talking about. You can't fix the problems in a system if you despise the system. They want to destroy the system. In toto, they want to destroy capitalism. Bernie Sanders said not that long ago that China, you got to give them credit because they've lifted more people out of poverty than anything else. No, they haven't. It's a communist society. Yes, their GDP has grown to the benefit of the ruling class. You want to really talk about a wealth, an income, you know, unfairness or whatever the hell they call it. You look at China. The people in power, the communist oligarchs, they are rich and wildly successful, can do whatever the hell they want. They can come and go as they please. The average peon on the streets doesn't see a piece of that. The average peon on the street is told to work and work and work. And if you don't want to work, well, you can try to escape, but you're more than likely going to end up in a gulag because you're not carrying your weight, comrade. So, yeah, this is Bernie Sanders' life. Hillary Clinton nailed it. But again, where was this Hillary Clinton in 2016? This Hillary Clinton would have stood a chance of winning. This Hillary Clinton didn't show up. Finally, let's have a laugh at the expense of Joe Biden as we say goodbye.
So, folks, you want to nominate a Democrat, a lifelong Democrat, a proud Democrat, an Obama Democrat, join us.
Join us in the nursing home, an Obama Democrat. Again, he didn't notice that he said it. He didn't go back and correct it. More words coming out of his own mouth that he doesn't seem to have any control over. The Atlantic, by the way, wrote a long piece explaining the smear job against Joe Biden and blaming all of his gaffes on his stutter. That he has a stutter. There's nothing in what you've said, what you heard there, or what you've heard Joe Biden screw up that has anything to do with a stutter. It has to do with a sputter in his gray matter. Also, no stutter causes you to grope, grab, and sniff the hair of women and young girls. Not that I've ever seen. Otherwise, we'd be talking about Mel Tillis's Me Too moment. That is all the time we have for today. Thanks for listening and telling a friend and all that good stuff. I will be back here tomorrow with another exciting episode. Have a great Monday.
Hello, Biden-Bama Democrat.